Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect, it is 1:35 p.m. on Wednesday, April 13, 2022. Present today are Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Representative LeBon, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, Representative Josephson. Online, we have Representative Thompson, and I am in the room, Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon, we will consider amendments for House Bill 272 and 273, increasing the BSA. And we began amendments last week on April 6th. We have five amendments before the committee this afternoon. Before we begin amendments, I'm going to invite Representative Story to the table to give us a brief opening statement. Thanks for being here, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Co-Chair Merrick and members of House Education Finance Committee. For the record, Representative Andy Story, House District 34, representing the Mendenhall Valley, Auk Bay, and Alfred Road, here in sunny Juneau, Alaska today. Very windy, though. Thank you all for the amendments and for your consideration of this bill, which I like to call increasing the base student allocation for excellence base. I'd just like to take a brief moment to discuss some of the amendments before the committee today. First of all, Amendment 1. My concern with this amendment is that it changes part of the foundation formula without vetting the full effects. Legislative Finance estimates that this will add an additional $11 million for correspondence to the cost of the bill. And the intention of this bill was not to open up the foundation formula, just to address the base student cost allocations and recognize that we haven't done that in 6 years, and the downward pressure of fixed costs that districts have no control over is eroding the base and their ability to keep some interventions in place to help kids with their learning, and also, most importantly, to make sure that we are moving the dial on achievement.
Thank you. Let the record reflect, at 1:36 p.m., we were joined by Representatives Foster and Carpenter.
So thank you, through the chair, co-chair. The rest of the amendments really are policy choices that we'll be making in investments. And I just wanted to share, I came to the numbers that I did before the committee in looking at the cost of inflation, which was 8% since we've last raised the base student allocation in 2017. I did an increase of 4%. Because I knew that this body is interested in making some, I believe they're interested in making some strategic investments to education in certain areas. And I know we have a reading policy bill before us that is going to take some dollars. And we all know reading is a critical base, a home-based skill. But I've also heard members talk about CTE, other investments, and so when I start out before session with this bill, I wanted to make sure that we helped move the dial on these fixed costs but left money for other opportunities and targeted funding. The other thing in this bill that I feel is really critical, and that is two-year funding mechanisms. In year two, it's a slight increase of $14 million and really just about 1%, and which totals $71 million because, of course, the $57 million goes forward. And this small increase helps sense the intention to move education funding forward. And why this is so important, and I believe this with all my heart, is our funding policy that we have picked to follow in the state of Alaska has really the ability to set stability in the system with a slight increase. If we flat fund, we are doing cuts, but it sets something where school board members, communities can plan with certainty that they will have this amount when they are doing their staff contracts. When they are planning for and do, they have to be accountable for the achievement gaps that they're finding where their students need more interventions. And so this way, as we've heard testimony from some people, some who are working within the system, they'll set an initiative to help. And again, we've heard examples from some superintendents about, yes, they're trying to help with reading, and we've got some, we've tried to, well, in Anchorage, they have a certain curriculum that they've been working for that takes they've made an investment in that program. And when they don't know what their funding is going to be, oftentimes they'll have to cut back on that investment, a very targeted one, because you have to be doing your graduation requirements and funding some of the basic things that don't go away but are part of our graduation requirements, and so you can cut them. So I'm sort of rambling a little bit here, but I just really wanted to thank you all for having this bill before you. It is very important how we set our education policy and the investment that we make in our children. And so I'm here to answer any other questions, and I do have what the amounts of the amendments will cost or any information that you might need to know. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Story. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Let's see. I'm just trying to understand. You mentioned, Representative Story, you mentioned that you're increasing, you said, inflation at 8%, which we hear in the news, inflation's at 8%, which is an all-time high, and typically we use a number of about 2%, and I believe in your presentation, you're doing some averaging, and it was between 1 and 2%. So when you say 8%, you don't mean annually. You mean 8% total increase from 2017, and also, and I thought that was the last time the BSA was increased. Are you going back to that date to do your calculation, or are you going back to the date of the last one-time increment? I'm just trying to get a handle on how you did your calculation for this inflation.
Yes, and if you don't mind, I'd like to call Ariel Svetlik from my office up to answer that question.
And we have some guests that came in, and they're rapidly departing. But we just wanted to welcome you to House Finance and let you know that we are talking about money for education. So that was very nice timing.
And through the co-chair, I did want to say I must have misspoke, because 8% is the total, and this is only a 4% increase for this year. But Ariel can, Ms. Svetlik can go into more detail.
For the record, Ariel Svetlik, staff to Representative Andy Story. And Andy pretty much said it. Sorry, Representative Story pretty much said it. The 8% is in reference to the inflation between FY17 and FY22, which just completed. And then the 4%, which she referred to, that would be the increase to FY23 that we have in the bill. To be exact, it's a 3.8% increase, and then we have another additional 0.9% increase, which would bring us up to the $71 million in FY24.
Thank you.
Any further before we move to amendments? Seeing none, I'm going to ask Representative Johnson to restate her motion on amendment number one. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. One moment here while I find my amendment. I have everything else in front of me. All right. I move amendment number one. I believe it's already been moved, but I move it and we're back in action.
Thank you. I will object for discussion.
So amendment number one, it doesn't open up the formula. It just doesn't change the formula. It does add, it funds correspondence students at 100% of the current formula on the base only. So we're not changing any of the formula pieces to that, and none of the indexes and so on. Not sure entirely how much to speak to it, but we have approximately 19,000 plus students in correspondence in the state, and I have went back and done some research, and one thing that we can say for sure is that this is one of the things that saves the state probably more money than any other program that we have put in place, because with a correspondence student, we don't add the special ed, I guess I could go through the cost factors, but we don't add the multipliers. So every student, and as you can imagine, many people that do have special ed students, they do keep them at home, and they do that teaching at home. So to provide them with the support sometimes that they need for those students that we aren't seeing in this list, but as well to continue to provide the solid education that people are receiving in their correspondence studies. That would be the reason I'm putting this forward, particularly since the pandemic, we've started to find that hybrid learning really does work, and it does work well, but students are actually spending more time, although they're maybe correspondence students, they're also taking classes at their local school. So we're moving into a hybrid, more of a hybrid model in some of these areas, and it makes sense to allow the money to follow the child and to provide the best education that they can get.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Discussion on Amendment 1. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll start with a question, and then I'll have some added comments after that. But to the maker of the amendment, the sponsor of the amendment, you stated that if Amendment Number 1 was adopted, that it wouldn't change the formula or open up the formula, and I would like you to clarify from what basis are you making that statement. Is that of the opinion of Letch Finance, or for what was your source for that statement is one thing I'd appreciate. And then in terms of a comment, when we last spoke to this amendment, I won't repeat completely what I said previous to that, but I would like to make the point that that brick and mortar schools have inherent higher costs, and in many cases homeschool or program students who don't receive their education in a brick and mortar school still benefit in many cases by having the ability to participate in activities sponsored by brick and mortar schools. They can go in and participate in sports programs, benefit from the salaries that go forward to the coaches of those programs or to the activity directors of those programs. They benefit from the use of the facilities, which is, you know, are heated by the school district and all of those kinds of things. And so it's not like they don't benefit from the fact that brick and mortar schools are funded at 100%, whereas homeschool participants are at 90%. So with that, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. And I will note online we do have Kelly O'Sullivan from the Legislative Finance Division and Heidi Teschner, the Acting Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development, for questions as well. Representative Johnson?
Yes, I have two things I would say. One is I do have my staff is in the room, and he is quite knowledgeable on the entire formula and can speak to it a lot more better than I can. But I think one of the things that I heard from Representative from Ketchikan is absolutely correct. We do have students that are going in and using the school facilities, and we have just the districts are not told exactly how much they have to give to the families. Those numbers they're set by the district. They're not set by the state. So if it's a district that has a large amount of local students that use the facilities, they don't necessarily have to, they keep more for their facilities and however that balance might be. I mean, the good thing about having local control is this is, again, local control for the school districts. And so some school districts have more local students, and some school districts have more remote learning students, but they have actually worked out quite well in the sense that districts have found a way to meet needs across the state and picking up different areas where they excel at. So, you know, we have the IDEA program, which is obviously it's kind of the standout of the correspondence programs, but they have, you know, they found a real niche where they do very, very well. And then other school districts have said, hey, IDEA is doing such a fabulous job, we might want to pick it up on our own correspondence program. And so they have also, they've also provided a sense of a certain amount of competition among school districts to try to meet a certain standard. So for that reason, actually, because local students are using local facilities and they can spend their school money on coaches and basketball, whatever their sports they want to take, that's one of the reasons that this, to me, makes sense.
Representative Ortiz, would you like to hear from Legislative Finance?
I would, thank you.
We have Kelly O'Sullivan. Ms. O'Sullivan, if you could put yourself on the record, and did you hear Representative Ortiz's question?
I think the question is correspondence the 90% to or 100% part of the formula?
If you could place yourself on the record, and I will have Representative Ortiz restate his question.
Yes, this is Kelly O'Sullivan, Division of Legislative Finance.
Thank you, Ms. O'Sullivan. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. Ms. O'Sullivan, the question that I put forward is, if this body were to adopt Amendment Number 1, would the effect of that, adopting Amendment 1, quote, open up the formula for, would it just open the formula as it currently exists, or could it be adopted and not have any particular impact on the formula itself?
My understanding, it would just change that particular part of the formula.
Just a follow-up. So then, from your perspective, it does, quote, change the formula. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Okay, we have questions from Representatives Wohl, Josephson, and then Carpenter. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My understanding of this amendment is it doesn't change the BSA number. It just changes the amount that correspondence schools get. Currently, they get 90% of the BSA. This would get it up to 100. It used to be 80%. I think that was changed in 2014. Last week, they didn't know the date of that. So I guess I oppose the amendment for a few reasons. The amendment sponsor said it saves money, and it does, because if the student is learning at home or in any sort of pod or not in a school building, the student-teacher ratio is much different. In a school, you need a teacher for about every 25 students. I believe in correspondence, it's every 150 students. So you can hire way less teachers. You don't have to maintain buildings and have, football fields and all this other stuff that, as was pointed out, correspondence students do use those facilities. They might, I know my daughter's on a team with a lot of kids that are correspondence students that don't go to the school but participate in athletics. So it saves money, but then by that logic, we should have all kids learn at home all the time and not have schools, which I certainly don't want, and I think a lot of people don't want. I'm concerned because if this diverts, and apparently it doesn't divert money away, it just increases the pie. So this will cost, this will add to the budget, and Mrs. Sullivan can comment on that. But I think if you go from 90% to 100% and you don't take any money away from the brick and mortar schools, then this will add to the budget by millions of dollars, and I'm sure she can tell us how. Correspondence schools have gone up in population, in enrollment, largely because of the COVID pandemic, and a lot of kids chose to do that instead of remote learning, and schools were closed. I don't know if that enrollment's going to go down. Some of them are doing gangbusters business, and I haven't heard from, we've heard from school districts in this committee, many of them saying what dire straits they're experiencing. I haven't heard from any correspondence schools saying, man, times are tough right now. I think businesses are booming, and they're doing quite well. And also, the correspondence formula, and in Fairbanks, I know that every student that goes to correspondence school, the family is has access to $2,000 or $2,500, and I'm not sure which number that is, with which to buy curriculum and, you know, outside of school district curriculum if they want. They have any kind of place they can buy it. They can also use that money for violin lessons or ski lessons or other things too. And I'm concerned that if this number goes up to 100%, there'll be more money perhaps available to families. And, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing in and of itself, but I worry that it'll attract more families to take their kids out of school. And I maybe mentioned last committee meeting, I ran into a woman at a social event, and she had four kids at home doing homeschool for 1 year, and now they're back in school. But she says she's concerned kids are leaving brick and mortar, and she says there's a lot of money in keeping your kids at home, and she was concerned about it. And I think this would add more money to that. And I want the brick and mortar schools to be robust and have good educational offerings, and I'm worried that if this were to pass, it would draw more kids away from brick and mortar. So I'm going to oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Ms. O'Sullivan, would you like to comment on Representative Wool's statements?
Kelly O'Sullivan, for the record, I would just say that, yes, he is correct. This would add to the cost. It would not take away funding.
Yes, follow-up, Representative Wool.
Yes, do you know if you take the 9,000, I believe, kids, 19,000, sorry, off by a one. What's the fiscal note to go from 90 to 100% for 19,000 kids?
For the record, Kelly O'Sullivan, that would be approximately $11.5 million.
Okay, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Sullivan, if we spread $11 million to 19,000 students, is that about something over $500 and approaching $600 a student?
Have not done the math.
If I'm right that it would be about, I think, $579 a student, the bill as written seeks a $280 increase per student, isn't that right? In the version that Representative Story has brought to us today.
I'm sorry, are you asking what the BSA increase is?
The BSA increase under Representative Story's bill calls for $280. Is that an increase per student? Is that correct?
Correct. I think the first year is 223, and then it goes up to 278.
All right. And so this correspondence increase, by my reckoning, is sort of double that? Per student, is that right?
I just switched spreadsheets, just a second. It looks like about 593.
Follow up. And would, under this amendment, if there is an increase to the BSA, the correspondent students enjoy the benefit of that as well, right? So this is benefit on
correct.
Top of benefit. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Josephson. Pardon me, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just following up on this previous conversation, question is what portion of the $11.5 million increase would go to the student allotment for the correspondence programs?
Ms. O'Sullivan?
This is Kelly O'Sullivan. I do not have that information. Perhaps Heidi Teschner could answer that.
Thank you. Ms. Teschner, if you could place yourself on the record and help Representative Carpenter with this question.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay. For the record, Heidi Teschner. I'm Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. And through the chair, that will be up to the school district to determine whether or not they change the student allotment or they provide more services directly.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. So the follow-up to that direct question would be then that the 90% that's currently allotted to the correspondence program from the BSA, the district then determines what portion of that 90% goes out to the students?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. Another question on unrelated subject.
Representative Carpenter.
Come back to me. I just lost my train of thought.
We will come back to you. And Representative Johnson wanted to comment.
I have a few comments. Just wanted to address a few things that were said. First of all, this is not an either-or kind of thing. We're talking about students in Alaska. We're not talking about trying to take away something from any other students. But we do have a teacher shortage in Alaska. We've talked about that. And this can help us with that. I will have to save some of this for additional comments. But
brief it is. House Finance back on record. Representative Johnson.
So some things that I wanted to highlight were the district still gets this funding for the student. Whatever student that you have, the district gets the funding. They're the ones that decide how much is going to be, whether it's services provided or whether it's going to be an allocation for various things. The district makes that decision because it's still local control. But if you talk about $2,500, when we're talking about 10%, how much is that? That's $250. I mean, we're not talking about these huge increases to individuals that we're going to draw. We're not in competition here. This is what I am trying to get across. We're not in competition. We're trying to make things work, and this will provide additional funding to districts that are already providing facilities and kind of this hybrid system, and it's not... I just don't anticipate a big rush to homeschool because somebody got an extra couple hundred bucks. I mean, that's a huge commitment. It's a huge commitment to homeschool and to do it well. And to say that, you know, to indicate something like that, I think diminishes the actual effort that's going into their education by families and by the districts themselves. It doesn't take the responsibility of the districts away. It just is making it more of a level playing field, and I think this is really the future of where we're going to go with schooling and work. We're starting to see we're marrying up working at home and schooling at home. We're starting to see, I don't know what it's like in other districts, but MATSU right now has a rolling 30% truancy rate. That means 30% of the students are not showing up, and they're not always the same people. That's a big deal. So how are we going to address that? If kids need to stay home, they need to be educated home. Maybe there is a third, you know, I don't know exactly how that would be. I'm just saying that the pandemic has changed things, and if we don't think that they have changed things, then we're mistaken about that. And the traditional brick-and-mortar school, I would like to see you know, I would like to see, I mean, I won't say I would like to see everything go back to pre-pandemic because I don't know that that was perfect, but I would like to see, you know, people taking the education seriously as they should. And maybe part of that is a hybrid system that doesn't say we have a student that's just here for brick and mortar and we're going to have all these things that we can add on to that student so we get more money and so therefore they're worth more. Well, that's not the case. What we're talking about is all students are equal. These are all public school students and we're trying to educate them to the very best of the abilities that we have, given the circumstances that we have. Alaska's a unique, just in general, we're a unique place to educate. I think we're the first place in the country that ever had correspondence schools that could be, you know, used by people. I know that was even before, you know, the way that was currently done. I know kids that did correspondence when I was a kid. So this is an attempt to change up diminish anybody else's education at all. And I don't think that's what's going to happen. This actually brings more money into the districts. I know with MATSU, again, it became evident in MATSU that people were homeschooling, there was correspondence needed, and some of the programs were great. I mean, IDEA was great, Raven Homeschool, the different programs out there. And so MATSU Central School was developed to make sure to capture back some of those funds and to do local education. That's all been very good for the education of our children. I know that for a fact, and it's working. I just wanted to make those points. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I wonder if Ms. Teschner could speak to the cost sharing arrangements that exist between brick and mortar schools or brick and mortar school districts and the correspondence programs. But when a student who's in a correspondence program decides to attend a brick and mortar school for a portion of a day or for a program or for a class.
Ms. Teschner?
Yes, for the record, Heidi Teschner, Department of Education Early Development. Through the chair, Representative Carpenter. So if a student, say, is half-time enrolled in a correspondence program and half-time enrolled in a brick and mortar school, their funding would be a half-time student that flows through the school size table and receives all of the foundation formula factors, and the half-time calculated at the 90%, which is currently in statute. So that is, we would account for the fact of, depending on how they're enrolled in the school, that is how their funding is determined through the formula.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. So I know that my own school district has brick and mortar schools with 100% of the base student allocation. They also have their own correspondence program. And if a student moves from the brick and mortar school, the family decides to move to the Connections homeschool program, then the district is the one that suffers a 10% hit on that. Even though the student is still in the school district, the district is the one that receives the hit on or the reduction in funding, because the parents chose to go that different direction. Isn't that an accurate statement?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, since the student is, I mean, yes and no, because the student is no longer being served through the brick and mortar, so the cost of that student and providing the services just shifts from the brick and mortar, but yes, because it costs more to run a brick and mortar school than a correspondence program, that it would be relatively accurate.
Follow up.
I think that didn't exactly address the question. What I'm getting at is the base student allocation. It's not the base school district allocation. It's the base student allocation. And so the per student amount that the school district gets, if for a student that goes to a brick and mortar school, is reduced, if that student then chooses to stay within the school district but participate in that school district's correspondence program, meaning the school district is the one that receives less funding because that student and the parents of that student decide to do something different with education at the local level. And it's the district that's really held or that suffers or realizes a reduction in funding because of what the parents decide to do.
So through the chair, Representative Carpenter, so the so if a student through if they're in through the count period, they're enrolled in a brick and mortar school, and then they're in that brick and mortar school through the count period, and then move to a correspondence program, they would ultimately be generating less money. Obviously, it, so the count is based on the count. So the foundation formula, when we figure out the basic need for district, is determined by the count period. So depending on when a student shifts, if they would, they would generate less money under a correspondence program, but depending on when that shift happens, depend on if the district would potentially like lose money, because if the just like I just finished trying to say, if the district, a student is enrolled for the full 20-day school count period, the district in a brick and mortar, the funding formula generates that student through the brick and mortar at the higher amount. If they change to a correspondence program later on, that just happens after the count period, but does not have an effect on the overall formula basic need amount for that district.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you for the follow-up. So to make this, simplify this just a little bit more, let's talk about from one school year to the next and assume that the base student allocation doesn't change. So the current 5,930 base student allocation, 100% of that goes to a student this year. And then if that family decides to go through a correspondence program within that school district the following year, and the base student allocation doesn't change, then the district is going to receive 90% of that number the following year, even though that student is still in the school district. Is that correct?
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, that is correct.
That's enough for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Teschner, kind of along the same line of questioning from Representative Carpenter, if I have a student who is in correspondence but takes advantage of my local school district's elective programs, and several come to mind, I want to play sports, so I'm on a sports team. I want to be in the band, so I'm in the band. I would like to take wood shop, so I'm in wood shop. And maybe my core courses are correspondence for the first half of the day, and maybe the second half of the day I'm engaged in sports and wood shop and on participating in the band. Do the dollars associated with those activities and that student follow the district? So in essence, that student is not receiving free use of the facilities and participating in those activities, but in some manner those dollars are following the student to the district. Would that be a true statement?
Through the chair, Representative Lebon, assuming that those are brick and mortar classes that the student is taking, so they would be jointly enrolled in the brick and mortar as well as in correspondence, then they would be receiving funding through brick and mortar and then the correspondence funding for the time that they're in a correspondence program.
Follow-up?
Yeah, and I guess the point is the dollars do follow the student if they're taking advantage of programs within the school district that require participation at the school building itself. It's hard to be on a sports team correspondence. It's hard to be in the band correspondence. Some activities are better suited if you're in the building itself. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 2:22 p.m. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I wanted to, getting myself back into the groove from when we ended at, I was wanting to make the point that the district still manages the money. The district is the one that determines how much money that will go to a correspondence program. And I don't know if it was noted that if a student spends half a day in a brick and mortar school in the district and then half a day in the correspondence school, they count as a full student as far as the district goes, as far as getting the add-on add-on portions of the formula. So this doesn't change it, but the size factor, district cost factor, special needs factor, vocational career, technical funding factor, intensive services count, those are not being changed in this at all. But any correspondence student who is considered more than half-time, the district does not get those add-ons for those students. But anytime they have half a day or more, then they do, the district is considered a full-time student for the cost adjustment factors. So it is beneficial to the district to, it's beneficial to the district. They still get money for administration. They still get money for oversight. They're still doing their due diligence. These aren't kids that are just in the wind out there. And certainly there could be kids like that in Alaska, but we're not paying for them. They're not part of the public school system. This is the public school system, and this is it's a method of learning that we have determined works for us in Alaska, and for that reason, we've chosen to allow it by statute. And in this case, it brings the students into parity with other students. We're not trying to discriminate between anyone, but it also does not harm the district.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be brief. I just want to make a couple quick points. Relation to Representative Carpenter's question to Ms. Tishner, a student enrolling in brick and mortar 1 year and then correspondence the next year, it's more than a 10% decrease since the multipliers come into effect. So a 6,000 BSA for a correspondence would be more like a 10,000 amount for the brick and mortar. So it's quite a bit of reduction. The three biggest correspondence, IDEA, Raven, and MATSU, would be the biggest recipients of this 10% increase. And, you know, a lot of kids in Fairbanks go to IDEA and Raven, but they can't also go to the brick and mortar because those schools don't have a brick and mortar. And they have a little building, and they keep, it's a very nice building, and they put a lot of money into it recently. And I guess if you want to help all kids equally, raise the BSA, because they'll all get an increase. That's the simplest. And lastly, I don't think it's a system that's broken. They've never come and asked us for money, unlike the school district, so I don't see a need for it.
Thank you. Representative Josephson. Thank you. Further discussion on Amendment 1? Seeing none, Representative Johnson in wrap-up.
Current law limits funding to 90% of what it would be for non-correspondence students. In this case, it does not change the formula. The formula's amounts stay the same. The only part of the formula that has changed is bringing the correspondence student into parity with other students. So this is not not an attempt to be comparative. It's not an attempt to take away from anyone at all. It's to recognize that in the midst of the pandemic, that we've recognized that there's been not just the correspondence that we've done for years in Alaska, and not just the brick and mortar that we also have done for years in Alaska, but there's a new way of teaching and learning that somehow people have made work. And I believe we're going to see more of that as time passes. I think that we're going to have to address the situation where people are sometimes in school and sometimes not in school. So I believe this is a good amendment. It's not a large increase. It is the total amount, the projected total entitlement for correspondence students at this point is $1.19 billion. And if this were to pass, this $10 million, it would be $1.2 billion, $1.95 to $2.06, so, or $1.206. So comparatively, this is a minor amount, but it will pay dividends for our districts and for our students.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. With that, I will maintain my objection. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Wool.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative Laban.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Five yeas, five nays.
And with a vote of five yeas and five nays, Amendment number one has failed to be adopted. That takes us to Amendment number two by Representative Laban. Representative Laban, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment number two.
There's been an objection. Representative Laban.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What Amendment number two does is it takes the current base student allocation dollar amount up from $5,930 per student by approximately $251 to $6,181. The second thing it does is it eliminates any increase in fiscal year 2024. So the effective date for this change would be July 1st, 2022, or the first day of fiscal year 2023. And what we've heard from school districts is they need immediate relief. This is an attempt to hear that plea for immediate relief. It actually increases the amount of the relief over House Bill 272 as it's currently written. And I might add the increase is still within a 5%, less than a 5%. So it's a modest increase, but it's a meaningful increase, and it offers more immediate benefit for the school districts. So with that, Madam Chair, I move Amendment number two.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Question for the sponsor of the amendment. What's the overall impact? If Amendment number two were to adopt it, what's the overall fiscal impact? Because while it increases the funding, the BSA for 1 year, it calls for for no increase the following year. So if this were to be amended, what would be the net effect of total money going to education? What would be the impact of that?
Representative Laban.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, it would be a $7.1 million increase.
Representative Ortiz.
Over the 2 years?
Through the chair, it would be a $7.1 million increase from what the bill sponsor is proposing. In other words, I'm increasing the recommended increase. If I may, the bill sponsor is asking for an increase to $6,153 in the current BSA of $5,930. Mine takes it up more to $6,180, and my numbers say that would be a $7.1 million increase from the current proposal.
Representative Ortiz.
Just for clarification, I understand that would be that increase for that year, but the next part of your amendment takes all increases. pieces away for the next year, which if we didn't adopt that amendment, the current bill would call for an increase both this year and next year. So that's what I'm asking you to try to calculate. So the net impact of total dollars going to education, when you account the two-year part of it, what would that be? Would it be a reduction, would it not?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I'm splitting the difference between the increase amount for fiscal year 23 with fiscal year 24. So the increase amount of 7.1 million would also be the amount of the decrease from fiscal year 24, because I'm splitting the difference in the proposed increase from the bill sponsor.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease. House Finance on the record. Is there more discussion on amendment number two? Representative Josephson.
Yes. Under discussion, I think the bill, I like the sensibility and the concept of the bill is inadequate in meeting capital needs, and this would make it more inadequate. It's a cut to the bill. Therefore, it was.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair. So, semantics here. It is a cut to the bill. I agree. It's reducing the fiscal year 24 through fiscal year 28 cost from a $71 million to a $64.2 million. So your fiscal year 24, fiscal year 25, 26, 27, 28 would each be $6.9 million less than what your fiscal note shows now, which is still an increase to the BSA as it currently stands right now. So in essence, this bill, if this amendment passes, is increasing the BSA this year and all years out to fiscal year 28 and beyond.
Thank you. Further discussion on amendment number two. Representative Wohl.
Thank you. I'll rephrase what Representative Carpenter said. It's an increase to the BSA for many years. But by amending the bill, it's a decrease from the bill. So it's an increase from current law. It's a decrease from the bill. So if we support the bill with the current numbers, this amendment will make it less. And all I've heard from my district is they're hurting. And even if we pass 57 or 60 million, it helps a fraction of their hurt, but they're still hurting. So I oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Further discussion on amendment two? none. Representative LeBon in wrap-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand it is a reduction in the funding from what the bill proposes. Philosophically, I understand that the 32nd legislature is making decisions for education funding, and next year there will be a new legislature, and if they want to bump it again, they'll have an opportunity. Maybe many of us will be back, maybe some of us won't be, we'll see. But for now, I think giving the districts a little bit more relief in the here and now is a benefit of this amendment, and I would encourage the committee to support it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative LeBon. Representative Josephson, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll on amendment number 2?
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Wohl.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative LeBon.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
No. No.
Representative Wohl.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Merrick.
No.
4 yeas, 6 nays.
And with a vote of 4 yeas and 6 nays, amendment number 2 has failed to be adopted. That takes us to amendment number 3 by Representative Josephson. Representative Josephson, do you have a motion?
Do I move amendment 3?
Object.
There's been an objection. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Committee, I want to again commend Representative Story. She has been the leader in the building on the need to adjust the BSA. And it actually, it begs the question, I'm not sure I know the answer, but the governor presumably could veto this as a statute. Treated as such, the override possibility would be simpler than if he were to veto the one-time only money, as I see it. But at any rate, the one-time only money, what we've heard universally and across the board, is the districts are sort of happy about that, but it's just dreadful when it comes to planning. So again, I commend Representative Story for her efforts. However, this is a math problem. We haven't raised the BSA since 2017. And for reasons I can't quite explain, it happens with my permanent partial impairment bill, it happens all the time. It happens with the motor fuel tax bill. There's this sense that inflation isn't real. It's phony somehow. Even though our constituents will tell us that it's very real when they're buying bread and gasoline, et cetera. So similarly, it's very real to school districts. And I wanted to bring us back to March 7th, and I want to focus on the testimony, and I'll be as fast as I can, of Andy DeGraw, who I've never met in my life, or if I have, I don't remember. He's the chief operating officer of the Fairbanks School District. And I just want to highlight a couple things he said. He said that the Fairbanks School District's deficit for this coming fiscal year is $19 million. The two-year deficit is $23 million. It increases in part because the hold harmless, and I sort of know what's meant by that. We all know what it means, the drastic change in the student population. It sort of softened in year one, but by year two, you get hit with that. So he was describing a number of $19 million. He then said, we are employing a two-year step-down approach. We are going to execute draconian level cuts. COVID-related relief funds are not enough to cover current deficits. COVID-related relief funds will be 80 to 90% exhausted by June 1 of next year. They're closing 3 schools. It's 10% of the buildings total. There are apparently 35 buildings in Fairbanks. Cuts will be made to the classroom, counselors, e-learning staff, instructional aides, the administrative level, assistant principals, activities coordinators, secretaries, and staff. He cited utilities increases of 20%, technology increases, transportation increases. And he said fuel alone was $1 million to the Fairbanks North Scarborough. He said it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. The cost is $1 million, now would be $1.3 million, for example. He said that, we all know this, they budget
budgeted for $3.25 to $3.50 per gallon, but it's $4.50 per gallon. The increases are unsustainable, he said. My colleague and friend, Representative Wohl, said, what would you get from this bill, Mr. DeGraw? He said in FY23, we'd get $5.3 million. So there's the raw facts. You've got this gentleman who's on Teams, looked very credible, very smart. He says, I have a deficit of $19 million. Representative Wohl says, what will this bill as written get you? He says, effectively, one quarter, a little bit better, of my deficit. And he says, next year, FY24, so really 2 years, it would only get him $3 million. And my view is, oh, and just to continue on this run, it won't take much longer. I wanted to be clear. I said, there was discussion about, does this include salary increases? He said, no. Salary increases are not built into these numbers. I said, is this deficit net of COVID dollars? He said, the deficit is net of COVID dollars. We then heard from Mr. McManus from the Gateway School District, the Tok region. The bottom line is this. I supported, and I do it again, three times, full funding of our oil tax credits, $500+ million. We know that we have SLRF funds that can supplant other funds. Is that sustainable? It's not sustainable, but it's there. We know that there is nominally $2.1 billion more than we anticipated a year ago coming in for FY22 and FY23. But we know that the numbers, even though we're at $104 today, Brent crude, we're suspicious of that because the governor used this five-day peak right when Putin invaded Ukraine or something like that. And you know, until the money's in, it's not in. But I look at this and I say, is this affordable, this extra $57 million, granted in perpetuity under the BSA, that I want to add? And the answer is yes. In fact, quite easily affordable. And, you know, I would cite to DeGraw's testimony, which was unimpeached, unassailed, and just as factual as it could be. And so I ask for your support on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Further discussion on Amendment Number 3? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I agree with Representative Josephson. I think... you know, the stats he quoted are accurate, and I think schools aren't something that we should be cheap on or not adjust for inflation. You know, motor fuel tax you can argue one way or the other or other things, but I think school, it's real people, it's real teachers, it's real students, it's kids, and I'm tired of hearing this argument. Well, we're X number in the nation. Why should we give more money? That's such the wrong argument. That's like the bridge is broken. Why should we fix it? It's broken. Because we need the bridge, and we need the schools, and we need to keep them as good or better than they are. So I support this amendment.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Josephson in wrap-up on Amendment Number 3.
I would ask for the committee's support. Obviously, there was some other line of thought that I wanted to share with you, but I think I've gotten to the rub of it. And, this is, by my staff and my reckoning, working with Ledge Finance, this takes us to about 7.8% when we're really at 9% inflation. This is darn helpful. But it's not the full dollars, but I'd be delighted for your support.
Thank you. Before the vote, we'll take a brief at ease. House Finance on the record. We are at Amendment Number 3. Representative LeBond, do you maintain your objection?
I do maintain my objection.
Thank Thank you. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll on Amendment Number 3?
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Wool.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter. Representative Edgman. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Laban.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
No.
5 yeas, 5 nays.
And with a vote of 5 yeas and 5 nays, Amendment Number 3 has failed to be adopted. Amendment Number 4 by Representative Josephson. Representative Josephson, do you have a motion?
I do. I move Amendment 4.
Object.
There is an objection. Representative Josephson on Amendment 4.
This is going to get faster. The arguments are even more salient because the math I gave you is even more proven up. In other words, if I'm off 2%, the math is excellent. This amendment would increase the BSA by 6% over FY22, biting more to the FY24 increase. So this spreads it effectively. It's not quite numerically 4 and 2, but it's close enough. And so this is more incremental, but I think it's valuable.
Thank you. Discussion on Amendment Number 4. Representative Wool.
You saw that look in my eye.
Yes,
no,
I did.
I just for the amendment, maker of the amendment, I see this as a lower number than the previous amendment. So it's a lower, it's a 6% as opposed to an 8%. Can you just fill me in on the methodology if it's not a long explanation?
Thank you. Let the record reflect we were joined by Representative Rasmussen online at 2:48 p.m. Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, I only have a one-hour explanation, but I'm teasing. And I will tell Representative Wool that no, indeed, it is close to the 4% that the maker, the sponsor of the bill seeks, but then is 2%, taking us to 6285 for the BSA, the average student, I guess, in FY24. And so this, rather than this being about $71 million in FY24, this would be somewhere in the range of $85 million in FY24.
Representative Wool.
Thank you. And does that leave FY23 the same as the bill we're looking at? You're only changing the FY24 number? Through the chair, correct. Okay, thank you.
We'll take a brief at ease. House Finance on the record. We are on amendment number 4, discussion. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Josephson, and wrap up on amendment 4.
Yes. This bill would take, Representative Story's bill, increase the second year funding. I would note that, you know, there's been discussion about what the other body would tolerate, what our body would tolerate. I think these things are sort of unknowable. They've got mixed in with the Alaska Reads Act, and what does the governor want, and what will he support? I think we just, because they're unknowable, we have to look at the facts and say what's good, what do we want, and that's what's for this bill, this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Bond. Do you maintain your objection?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Will you please call the roll on amendment number 4?
Representative Wolf.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter. Representative Edgman. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Laban.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen.
No.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
And with a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 4 has failed to be adopted. With that, I move to rescind my action on amendment number 3. With no objection. Madam Secretary, will you please recall the roll on amendment number 3?
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Edgman. Representative Johnson. Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Laban.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen.
No.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Wolf.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
No.
5 yeas, 6 nays.
And with a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, amendment number 3 has failed to be adopted. Our final amendment is,
Madam.
Brief it is. House Finance on the record, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to rescind my action on Amendment Number 1.
Hearing no objection, Amendment Number 1 has been rescinded. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would like to move Amendment Number 1.
There's been an objection. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This amendment, again, would fund correspondence students at the same level as non-correspondence students. This additional funding for these students is estimated at $11.4 million. Right now, all of you know that the formula is complicated, but this makes our students, correspondence students, whole and funds them at the same level given the state of our state with the teacher shortage and our pandemic changes to school attendance. It makes sense that our districts would be able to work with a hybrid type of education system. And so this is about fairness, and it's about creating a parity among students and providing the districts with the additional funds as needed as they do get to control the formula or the dispensement.
Thank you. Further discussion on Amendment Number 1. Representative Josephson.
Yes, some quick bullet points here. Representative Wohl made the point, and you know, we all get 100 emails a day. I've not gotten an email requesting this from anyone in the state, or I haven't been told about it. That's number one. Number two, my understanding is the formula had been 80%, and that was formulaic, and that was sort of defensible based on the formula, and that as a policy matter or a political matter, the building at some point increased that to 90%. So I just don't know that we've established foundationally that this is necessary. And then the third thing is we just rejected an increase of $355 in 1 year. This would call for a $579 increase all in 1 year, and I just don't see the logic behind it, so I'm going to oppose it.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Wohl.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I want to help all students as well as the amendment sponsor, and an increase to the BSA will help all students. All students get the BSA. Correspondents get 90%. That's true, but they have much, much less overhead. And if you look at the recipients, now this amendment will cost $11.4 million, and it's distributed based on population of correspondence schools. So I think the biggest one is the Galena School District of $3.2 million because they have 7,300 students in their correspondence. These are students from all over the state. So these aren't, their school district probably has fewer buildings, say, than Anchorage or Fairbanks, but they're receiving far more funds. YK School District has the Raven School with 3,000 students, and as many, there's Raven buildings in Fairbanks, Anchorage, all over the state too. But their school district, the in-person portion is very small. Fairbanks has a lot of in-person school students. They would get $380,000. So almost one-tenth of, say, Galena or one-fifth of YK, because they don't have a large homeschool, correspondence school population. And Mat-Su, $1.6 million. So about half of Galena, but about four times as much as Fairbanks. And again, Mat-Su has 2,000 in their district school, correspondence school. So I understand that certainly these school districts will do very well, but again, as has been stated many times, they never came to me and said, we don't have enough money for whatever. And they don't have as many teachers or buildings or any of the maintenance costs. So I'd rather raise the BSA, which this bill is doing, and Representative Josephson tried to bump it up a little more and failed. But, you know, if we're
we're going to add money, I'd rather add it to the entirety of it instead of sort of picking a few winners and losers in this case. So I oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
I would just quickly like to associate myself with the comments made by the two previous speakers and also add that how this impacts individual districts and homeschool students is highly variable depending on things like whether a district has a homeschool program or whether they lose their students to more statewide programs, things like that. So there's just lots and lots of variabilities here, and so, yeah, I would oppose this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Sorry. So the stats that were placed before us here a little bit ago, I'm not sure exactly where they come from. I suppose that maybe Representative Johnson handed them out. And so I can't speak for the veracity of the numbers here, but assuming that they're correct, 19,366 correspondence students in 2023. If we're thinking about this in small schools, and I just threw out a 500 population size for a small school, I don't know whether that's on average or not. Is that small?
It's not small in the last.
Not small. 1,000? Okay, 1,000 students in a school, that's 19 schools that we're talking about, correspondence. If a population of a school is 1,000. My elementary schools around where I'm at are not, they're small schools, right? We're talking 19 schools that receive 10% less funding. 19 schools worth of students, let's put it that way, that receive less funding. Those are parents that choose to remove their kids from the brick and mortar system and educate their students in a different manner, and we're saying that 10% you don't get. It's the highest growing demand in our school system, and we're saying you don't warrant but 90% of what everybody else gets. So this amendment makes it level. It says regardless of what the parents decide, the school districts are not, they're held harmless. School districts are going to get the same amount of money whether a parent chooses to go on a correspondence program or whether they go to a brick and mortar school. And I think that's fair.
Thank you. Further discussion on amendment number one. Representative Wohl.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to comment that, first of all, 19,000 kids isn't 19 schools. It's kids learning correspondence. They're not in a brick and mortar. There's no gym. There's no roof. There's no boiler. There's no janitor. There's no school buses. There's no special ed classes. There's none of that stuff. A lot of them are learning at home or they get together in pods. The overhead is extremely, extremely lower. So you can't say it's equal across the board. They are different systems. The costs of maintaining a school with a 25-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio is a lot different than maintaining a correspondence school with, we have to have one teacher for every 150 kids. So they're not equal. It's not a level playing field. So to pay 90% of BSA, they're making money. That's why they're not coming to see us. They make money on this. And if the state wants to push everyone into correspondence school and save a ton of money, they will. But I don't want that to happen. I want to maintain brick and mortar schools. My kids stayed home for a year. They hated it. And a lot of kids went through serious, serious depression by being isolated and at home. Now, that's not for every kid. But a lot of kids need to be socialized for developmental reasons alone. So to put this on even par with brick and mortar is just not correct. So 90% of BSA, these schools are doing quite well. They're making money. I don't hear my school saying, yeah, we're making money. We don't need any more money. No. But the correspondence schools are. It's a profitable business. And that's why they don't come see us, because they're making bank.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Johnson and wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I just want to address the numbers that we have here. And while the district numbers that were read off as far as the numbers of dollars coming in for the district is certainly here in black and white, and I guess they are what they are, so I can go through them again. But the point is that anyone from any of these districts could be using their opportunity to join another district. So just because one district, it's not necessarily that just because the people are in this area, they're the only homeschool, they're only choosing to go to their district's school. So this is rather diverse throughout the state. I mean, I have to say thank you to the IDEA and the Galena School District for educating a whole lot of Alaskans, because they have done a huge amount of educating of Alaskans throughout the state, and it's not just in Galena, that's for certain. The district does receive, but the district that is participating and has a homeschool, I don't say homeschool, correspondence program, they still receive money, and they choose the amount to dispense to the parents and what services to dispense to the parents. At 50% of the day, if 50% of the day is spent in at the school and they have a hybrid program, 50% of the day, then the cost additive, the additive portions of the BSA does add to the student amount, and that district does receive those extra funds. So for if it's only half a day, it's that lesser amount, but it's still, it does have a significant impact on the districts. And the districts provide services. I think we've all heard this before, but I'm going through my spiel again, because I do feel strongly about it. And I've watched it more and more. I've seen over the years the way Alaska's correspondence has developed from when I was a kid, I guess there was people that showed up, got their box in the mail, and they lived out in wherever, and I was always a little jealous because they had cool things in that box that I never got to get, and I remember the school box, and then over time, because Alaska's always had that, because we have unique situation for education, and over time we've developed things differently, and as the pandemic has changed the way that the schools are having and we do have an attendance issue that we need to address, but as we have this hybrid attendance, we also are recognizing that we have hybrid education situations as well as a hybrid workplace. So our society is changing, but what's not changing is the fact that we want all of our kids to be educated. We want them to all be at the same level. I don't think there's anybody at this table that doesn't want to see all the kids in Alaska have a good, fair, equitable education. They want to have the districts funded and have quality schools. I don't think there's anyone here that would disagree with that. And so I think this is a step in the right direction, and I think that it helps the schools that are involved in working with the parents. I mean, this isn't happening in a vacuum. It's not like this is just some, this is just a group over there. These school districts do have a responsibility, and they do participate with the students, and they do work with them. And I know that for a fact. I mean, I know that from personal experience. So for those reasons, I would request a yes vote.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
With that, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll on Amendment Number 1?
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative Laban.
Yes.
Representative Ortez.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yeah. Yes.
Representative Wool.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
6 yeas, 5 nays.
With a vote of 6 yeas and 5 nays, Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are on Amendment Number 5 by Representative Josephson.
I move Amendment 5.
I will object for discussion. Representative Josephson.
Yes. This bill tracks in a narrow way, not clearly in a comprehensive way, but in a narrow way, Representative LeBond's expression of concern that the districts need help immediately. And so this would get us to about a 6% BSA increase all in 1 year, starting July 1. I would note that if I were an entirely selfish person, I would say, I represent the Anchorage community, and its district made out quite well with CARES dollars and something called ESSER dollars, which were not funded through the foundation formula. And for reasons I can't recall, our CFO of the Anchorage School District said that Anchorage got something over 30% of the total state ESSER dollars. And so Anchorage in FY23, now there's a massive cliff wall coming in 14 months, but in FY23, Anchorage is okay. But again, Fairbanks is not. It just isn't. 121 positions cut. 3 schools closed. Yes, maybe there's some consolidation. A deficit of $19 million, where the bill as written would replace 5 of $19 million. Why? I mean, that's the thing I haven't heard enough discussion about. We don't have $14 million more for Fairbanks alone. We don't have that. I know we have it. I'm positive we have it. And if there had been no COVID and oil was at $45, I wouldn't offer this amendment. But we're in a different world. We've passed SB 26. We still are untaxed. We can manage this, and we have to. We're going to get sued if we don't. So I'd ask for your support.
Thank you. Discussion on Amendment Number 5. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This adds something to the BSA, about $130, $132 maybe to the BSA, $132. I support that amount. The previous amendment added $600 to the BSA for those kids who learn by correspondence. So $132 is a fraction of that. So, and the impassioned speech by my colleague from the MATSU about kids getting an equal learning ability and we want to give our kids the best opportunity, I think this amendment in front of us is also that same opportunity for kids that don't go to correspondence school, that go to brick and mortar school. And I think that's the majority of kids in our state. I know it is, so I support the amendment, and I hope others that support raising the quality of education for all kids across the board, including correspondence that just got a $600 BSA increase. I think $132 is modest.
Thank you. Representative Wohl, just for clarification for folks at home, the $132 BSA increase is on top of what the bill had already given, is that correct?
Madam Co-Chair, yes, and you're correct. So it's an increase from statutory BSA, which 132, similar to the 10% increase, that was also, if the BSA increases, then the 10% increases as well, so it's the same.
Great, thank you. Further discussion on Amendment Number 5? Seeing none, Representative Josephson in wrap-up.
No wrap-up.
Thank you. I will maintain my objection. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Laban.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen.
No.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Wohl.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter. Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
No.
5 yeas, 6 nays.
And with a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, Amendment Number 5 has failed to be adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Laban.
I wish to reconsider my vote on Amendment Number 2.
To rescind action on Amendment
rescind
Number 2.
Action on Number 2.
Hearing no objection, Representative Laban on amendment number two. Is there a motion?
I move amendment number two under what I will call reconsideration to rescind my vote on amendment number two. What we've heard is that the districts need immediate help, and efforts to try to beef up the BSA have failed in other amendments. My amendment gives more immediate assistance to school districts, and I would urge the committee to reconsider my amendment and vote yes on amendment number two.
Brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 3:29 p.m. We are on reconsideration of Amendment Number 2 by Representative LeBon. Is there discussion? Representative Josephson.
Well, I appreciate Representative LeBon's concern with FY23. This would make a cut in FY24 over the budget and would do so in perpetuity. And these BSA opportunities don't come along that often. So as this is a cut to the overall bill, I oppose it.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative LeBon and wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the member from Anchorage has painted a pretty dire picture for Fairbanks. And I appreciate that because it is a crisis. And my hope is to get more money immediately to not just the Fairbanks School District, all school districts. And then, of course, we can have this discussion again next year. We will know more about our financial position as a state in 12 months. And maybe we could even do better than what is proposed by the bill before us. So I would urge your yes vote on Amendment Number 2 to get more help immediately.
Thank you. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Thank you. With that, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll on Amendment Number 2?
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative LeBon.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
Pass.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Wolf. Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
5 yeas, 6 nays.
And with a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, Amendment Number 2 has failed to be adopted. That is all the amendments for this particular bill, House Bill 272. That takes us to final closing discussion on this bill. Any comments, questions? Seeing none. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 272, version 32-LS1365-I from committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, House Bill 272 is moved from committee. Brief at ease. House Finance on the record. We are now at House Bill 273, increasing the base student allocation with inflation, by Representative Story. We last heard this bill on April 1st, and amendments were due to my office on the 2nd, and we received no amendments. Representative Story, would you like to give just a brief refresher on House Bill 273?
Thank you, Coach. Chair Merrick, and for the record, this is Representative Andy Story, proudly representing District 34. Thank you again for considering this bill. The purpose of the bill is to give certainty to our communities, our families, that we value public education, and we are going to, and I believe we all value public education, but that we put into statute that we will be tying education funding to an average of 3 year previous of inflation with a gap year. And why we have a gap year is when we get the number for inflation from the U.S. Census Bureau, we get that after districts have to have their funding to their local municipalities. And so it makes districts have to go back and redo their budgets. It makes communities who might have been planning through budget committees their budgets having to redo budgets. It also, there might be a lot of debate about what they, if there is not an increase in the funding, about what might have to be cut. And that undermines public confidence in their schools, because we are hearing there will be less offerings, things that won't happen. And so by allowing for an increase, and this would be starting in July 1st of 2024, it would signal to all of our communities that we recognize that there are increased fixed costs that happens in districts every year, and it puts downward pressure on what we can offer to our students. Again, it helps so much in having the whole school community, the school system, by setting the budget ahead of time. I also think that it still allows, it's a very modest amount, it still allows communities, it allows the legislature to invest in initiatives that we might want to see more supported, such as career tech education or other areas. So with those comments, thank you.
Thank you. Discussion on House Bill 273. Seeing none, Mr. Kocher, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 273, version 32-LS1366/W from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Seeing none, House Bill 273 is moved from committee. Brief at ease. Finance on the record. This concludes our agenda for this afternoon. Our next meeting is tomorrow at 9 a.m. We will hear the actuarial analysis and take public testimony on House Bill 220, Retirement Systems Defined Benefit Option. With that, at 3:38 p.m., we are adjourned. Thank you.